Let me introduce myself. My name is John MacDonald. I'm Member of Parliament for Hayden Harlington. Let me introduce the other people on the platform. Annie Marchant is from the Campaign to Make War History, and Chris Coverdale, who will be making a presentation on a report back on where we're at in the long campaign to expose the criminality of what happened over Iraq. Just the background for me is that 3 years ago, I hosted a meeting in Parliament with Chris and a range of others, Mike Mansfield, a range of other lawyers as well, who outlined their concerns about the legality of the decision made by the government to undertake the war in Iraq, and set out then the basis upon which they considered the war, the decision on the war, was illegal. Now, since then, and Chris will explain, people have done a lot of detailed work on the legal position, research in detail, analysing points of law, and came to the conclusion that indeed the decision to invade Iraq was illegal, and since then have been seeking to have that properly investigated by the legal authorities. And what Chris will be reporting today is that, having attempted that over a period of time, we're now in a situation where the police are actually investigating the issue around the illegality of the invasion of Iraq. So that's a significant breakthrough. So today's press conference is to take people through the process of what's happened up until now and really what the consequences are as a result of this investigation. The first person I'd like to introduce is Annie Merchant from the Campaign to Make War History, who'll just describe the background to the campaign and its role.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that introduction, John, and it's a real pleasure to see so many people taking interest in this subject. I just want to say a few words by way of contextualising what we're discussing today. My background began as an MI5 officer, and then I became a whistleblower in the 1990s with my ex-partner David Shaler, and I've also been an active peace campaigner since about 2002. So I really just want to have a look at the problems our democracy has hit, primarily, I think, because of the distortion and unhealthy relationship between our government and our spy agencies. That has led inexorably to the situation in which we find ourselves now. But just to go back over some of the key decisions that took us into war, we're all aware now, because of various parliamentary and judicial reviews, that a decision was taken unilaterally by Tony Blair when he went to see George Bush in March 2002 to support the US in their war endeavours in Iraq. That was then compounded, we found, from a leaked Downing Street memo, the notorious Downing Street memo, in which the then head of MI6, Sir Richard Dearlove, declared that the intelligence, his intelligence from his agency, was being shaped to fit the government policy, and not the other way around. Intelligence should always be used to inform the government policy so that accurate and appropriate decisions could be taken. We also had another clear warning as well from the then head of MI5, Eliza Manning and Buller, who formally warned the Prime Minister that by going into Iraq, and if they were indeed really weapons of mass destruction, the invasion would lead to the probability of those weapons falling into the hands of our terrorist enemies. That would lead to a direct increase in the threat to our national security. And then, of course, we have the two dossiers, the September dossier from 2002, where the two notorious claims came into being. First of all, that MI6 had revealed that Iraq was trying to procure uranium from Niger, and this was based on flawed intelligence and obvious forgeries. And of course, we also had in that dossier the notorious 45 minutes from doom warning. And that was a clear piece of spin. I mean, the idea that battlefield munitions could suddenly become a threat, to direct threat to British interests abroad, is just ludicrous. But that claim was given massive prominence both in the parliamentary debate, in the briefing papers, and also, of course, in the media, where we had front page headlines saying such things as 45 minutes from Armageddon. And then, of course, finally, we had the February dossier, 2003. This became known as the dodgy dossier because it was based primarily on a 12-year-old PhD thesis. But it did also include nuggets of new raw intelligence, which Blair had disseminated without prior written permission from MI6. Now, in my view, that is a clear breach of the Official Secrets Act, as well as many other breaches of the law he appears to have conducted during this run-up to the war. So we have a whole range of different issues that cause concern to us. Effectively, our country was led into war on the basis of spin and manipulation. Our country was led into an illegal, unjustifiable, and unending war, and that war has resulted in the deaths of Some estimates put it at well over a million innocent men, women and children in Iraq. So what the Campaign to Make War History is aiming to do, and also We Are Change UK, who helped to pull this meeting together, is to hold those people to account. Now, I've been involved in the peace movement, as I said, since about 2002, and there is so much anger and frustration and distrust around the country about why we were taken to war. But of course, millions of us have marched, millions of us have put hours and hours into trying to oppose this war, but it's got us nowhere. So what we're trying to do with these new campaigns is to hold our leaders to account through the courts. We're all equal under the law in this country, up to and including our Prime Minister and former Prime Minister. So all we're doing is trying to uphold the laws of this land and to hold them to account in order to try and prevent further innocent deaths in Iraq and also potentially further illegal and unjustifiable wars around the world. And finally, of course, to gain justice for those who have already died in Iraq. So thank you very much for coming, and I'll pass you over to Chris Coverdale. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Chris Coverdale. I've been investigating the breaches of the law, war law, for more than 5 years, and I first attempted to get the war stopped on the grounds that it was illegal a month before it started in 2003. And since then, we've had about 150 attempts to get the police to investigate what are quite obviously crimes. So today, just before I go into the details today, I would like to issue a health warning or some sort of warning anyway. It is very important to realise that when talking about the law, that we are absolutely clear of what the law says. It's not possible for journalists to report accurately on war crimes, for MPs and peers to hold ministers to account for war crimes, for the police and Crown Prosecution Service to prosecute war crimes without understanding the laws of war. If you don't know the law, you cannot know when it has been breached. So, to ensure that everyone gets the right picture, what I've done is prepare a 4-page briefing. You've probably got a blue document there that goes into detail on the laws of war. It's very important that before you report anything on here, journalists have a real understanding of the laws. And remember, not only does nobody in this room or no one in this country have a clear understanding of the laws of war, but none of the public have an understanding. So if you are going to communicate with them effectively, please, please put it into context of the laws that have been passed internationally over the last 80 years. I want to do three things. One, I want to explain the war laws that have been violated. Two, to explain the war crimes that the Metropolitan Police are investigating. And then three, outline where we go from here. At the end of that, we'll have a questions and answers session. So first of all, I'd like to start with a short reprise of what's gone on over the last 6 years, the key facts relevant. In March 2002, Blair agreed with Bush in Washington to wage war with Iraq. On March 7th, 2003, Lord Goldsmith, our Attorney General, sent his legal advice to Blair. After that, Blair and Goldsmith informed Parliament and the armed forces that war with Iraq would be legal and was authorised by UN Security Council resolutions 678, 687 and 1441. This was the lie, the key lie, that is, nothing about that statement is true. March the 18th, Parliament voted. They had a long 6-hour debate and they voted for the war, the armed invasion and occupation of Iraq. Luckily, there were 149 members, including John and a number of others, who voted against it, knowing that it was illegal and it was the wrong thing to do. Anyway, the outcome of it was that on March the 20th, the war started, and you'll remember the shock and awe bombardment of Baghdad, which was heavily publicised around the world on the television. coalition land, sea and air forces used cruise missiles, rockets, cluster bombs and depleted uranium munitions to make at least 40,000 attacks on targets in villages, towns and cities in Iraq. Between March, when the war started, and December 2007, we caused the deaths of at least 100,000 and possibly a million innocent Iraqis. And it is that act that we want to look at the legality of today. We've killed at least 30,000 and possibly 300,000 children. We need to make the point that not one of these people had done anything to attack or harm Britain. None of them had been allowed to plead for their lives in court, and none of them had been shown any mercy before they were massacred. And 150 British servicemen and women have also been killed, and certainly over 2,000 injured. Now, Tony Blair and the British government have repeatedly claimed that the invasion and occupation is legal, and Blair has said over and over again it was the right thing to do. The questions we ask is, since when has it been right to kill children? What law gives Tony Blair and George Bush the right to massacre tens of thousands of innocent people and destroy their country? When ever can a war be legal? Just before we start, can I just check in the room, how many of you have heard of the International Treaty for the Renunciation of War? About half. How many know what it says? That's interesting. One, two. How many of you have heard of the UN Charter? That's nearly the whole room. How many of you know what it says and what it prohibits? One or two. How many of you have heard of the Nuremberg Principles? That's good. How many have heard of the International Criminal Court Act? About half of the room. How many know what crimes it includes? Good. It's mainly the activists, I notice. Now, the point about this is that if you ask those questions of the normal general public, you'll get very, very few positive answers. And yet these are the world's most important laws. And if we are going to run this world on the basis of the rule of law, then we must know the law. So basically, what I want to do is, when Blair and Goldsmith claimed that the war with Iraq would be legal and was authorised, no one in authority in this country, in Europe or elsewhere, contradicted the claim by reference to the laws of war. And that's the important thing. So what we need to do is to be able to do that today. To say this is illegal because it violates this law. So in brief, the statutory laws of war governing the conduct of the UK government and British citizens are: one, the International Treaty for the Renunciation of War, 1928, is known as the Kellogg-Briand Pact, and 63 nations signed it, and it renounces war and promises to settle disputes peacefully. Then you have the UN Charter, in which states promise never to threaten or attack another country, and to settle all disputes peacefully. In 1946, the Nuremberg War Crimes Trials took place, and Germany's leaders were convicted of war crimes, of attacking and invading and occupying 11 countries. As a result of that, the United Nations General Assembly in 1950 brought out the Nuremberg Principles and set out the Nuremberg Principles, the seven universal laws of war. And they include four crimes, universal crimes that apply around the world: a crime against peace, crimes against humanity, war crimes, and complicity in those three crimes. The Rome Statute in 1998 of the International Criminal Court was the final agreement and most important of all war laws. This not only sets up the International Criminal Court, but it cedes ultimate jurisdiction over these crimes to the ICC and The Hague. Just as a matter aside, that's the first time in 1600 years that British citizens have had an external law enforcement authority under which they have to abide by the law, so that we are now controlled legally by the International Criminal Court if we commit any one of those three crimes. Right, let's turn to what's happening with the Metropolitan Police. As I said, we've reported these crimes on more than 150 occasions, and on every occasion the police in 44 different jurisdictions in this country have turned down and have failed to follow up the reports until just before Christmas. Now, what happened is that they are now reporting, investigating 14 different crimes. We went in there, and 6.5 hours we handed over lots of evidence and information about these 14 crimes. They fall into four main areas. The crimes that have been committed are genocide, crimes against humanity, war crimes, and conduct ancillary to those three crimes. And they are crimes under sections 51 and 52 of the International Criminal Court Act 2001, which is the British legislation that applies to every British resident. We also reported a crime against peace and complicity in a crime against peace under Article 6 and 7 of the Nuremberg Principles. Thirdly, we reported murder, incitement to murder, and conspiracy to murder under the Offences Against the Person Act, 1861. And finally, we reported conspiracy to commit genocide, a crime against humanity, and war crimes under the Criminal Law Act, 1977. In reporting the crimes to the Met, we focus mainly on genocide. But there is a reason for that, and that is that in America, the one law that George Bush has broken is the Genocide Convention Implementation Act, known as the Proxmire Act. And if Americans want to arrest and charge George Bush, then the way they can do it is under their own legislation, the Proxmire Act. But we thought that if in this country we make sure that Blair faces and answers charges of genocide in court, that'll provide a real benefit to the rest of the world in trying to get Bush and Cheney and the rest of them into court to answer for their crimes. Now, there's a lot of questions about genocide. Everybody has different understandings of what it is. But it's very important to go back to the legal definitions. The legislation lays out what genocide is in law. And in particular, in this country, there's a statutory instrument, the International Criminal Court Act 2001, Elements of Crimes Regulation. And this lays out that a crime of genocide by killing will have been committed if, one, the perpetrator killed one or more persons, two, such person or persons belong to a particular national, ethnic, racial, or religious group, three, the perpetrator intended to destroy in whole or in part that national, ethnic, racial, or religious group as such. And four, the conduct took place in the context of a manifest pattern of similar conduct directed against that group, or was conduct that could itself effect such destruction. Now, we provided police with incontrovertible evidence that each of the four elements of genocide by killing is present in the case of the Iraq war. When the police questioned us on whether we had evidence of intent, we quoted a number of examples, and I just want to bring out one that was one of the ones that we used. We had evidence of intent when we quoted, there was a statement made by Tony Blair when he was going around Iraq just before he left office. And it comes from Martin Bell's recent book, and relates to a conversation he had with a group of soldiers during his farewell visit. They were talking about the hard and dark side of soldiering, and the lives and limbs that were lost. And his horrific response was, "So, we're killing more of them than they kill us. You're getting back out there after them. It's brilliant, actually." Now that's the sort of statement which proves that Tony Blair intended to kill Iraqis. In the Secret League Leviathan of March 7, 2003, it very clearly shows that both Blair and Goldsmith knew 2 weeks before the war started that if they went to war, they would be committing the crimes of murder and aggression. Now that's fundamental, and the questions we asked were, why weren't ministers and MPs informed before the debate in Parliament so that they would be prosecuted for murder and aggression if they voted in favour of war? I'm certain that at least some MPs would have voted the other way if they'd known that before they went into the debate. Particularly that they would be personally criminally liable for murder and a crime of aggression if they went ahead. By the way, it's important to note that a crime of aggression, as described in the Secret Legal Advice by Lord Goldsmith, is the same crime. It's known as a crime against peace now since 1950. It's the same crime for which Germany's leaders were convicted and hanged at Nuremberg in 1946. They invaded 11 countries. As we no longer have capital punishment in the UK, we can't execute our leaders in the same way that they have executed 30,000 Iraqi children. But at least we do have the possibility of them receiving a sentence of 30 years in prison. Now that's a very brief rundown on the what we reported to the crimes. There are hours and hours and hours of evidence which we will be going through and contacting the police with, and which we hope that the press will also pass on to police forces throughout the country. So where do we go from here? How do we progress this movement to hold our leaders to account in court for their crimes? The first thing we must do is, with one child being killed every hour, our first priority must be to stop the killing and stop the use of armed force. It's illegal. We must force Parliament to overrule the government and immediately cancel all active service orders to the armed forces. How we're going to do that, I don't know, but with publicity and with your help, we can bring real pressure to bear on our Parliament to force our government to uphold the law. Secondly, every time an Iraqi or Afghani citizen is killed or injured by the violent actions of coalition forces, one or more of the 14 listed crimes is committed. We must inform every British citizen and every European citizen of this fact, and we must tell them about the laws of war and draw their attention to their personal criminal liability for the world's worst crimes. Thirdly, we also aim to arrest and detain all those responsible for war crimes and to persuade Parliament to set up a War Crimes Commission to ensure successful prosecution. It's clear through studying the legislation that every adult in Britain, by the way, who has paid tax to the government since the war started, committed the crime of conduct ancillary to genocide. Conduct ancillary to crimes against humanity. Conduct ancillary to war crimes. These are three criminal offences under Section 52 of the International Criminal Court Act. It's also clear that every resident is also complicit in a crime against peace, which is a criminal offence under the Nuremberg Principles. For those who are concerned, they may need to realise that ignorance of the law is no excuse. The fact that we do not know that law is no excuse. However, the courts will often show leniency if offenders can prove that as soon as they found out about their personal criminal liability, they took action, they renounced their support for the crimes, they've halted all taxes and financial assistance to government, and joined in national actions to halt the killing and arrest the killers. If you do that, the courts will look on your behaviour with leniency. Although we won't be able to arrest and try everyone who has committed a crime, it should be possible to arrest, charge, try and maybe convict the 5,000 or so political, civil and military leaders in this country most responsible for the wars with Iraq and Afghanistan. To do that, we must bring pressure on the police in every force in this country to start a criminal investigation into war crimes committed by those of our political, civil and military leaders who live or work within their jurisdiction. When we've got those three things underway, we must then reform the system. We must think about what on earth caused this country to commit such a heinous crime. Our belief is that Britain's outdated constitutional arrangements and governance systems are thoroughly corrupt and harmful. We cannot trust the judiciary, the House of Lords, or any department of government to conduct an independent review as to what's gone on. So, with your help from the media, we intend to set up an independent corruption commission investigating and exposing corrupt practice in Britain and reporting directly to the public and the media. And just as a matter of interest to people, we have already uncovered serious corrupt practice in the Foreign and Commonwealth Office, the Ministry of Defence, the Cabinet Office, and the Law Officers Department. And over the coming months, we will call press conferences to explain the corruption in those government departments. I'd like to finish by saying, if we are going to return Britain to the rule of law, we must publicise these issues widely around the world and generate public pressure on government and parliament to end the killings and uphold and enforce the laws of war. We need your help to do that. So we'd like to work with the media to help us set up and run a really effective campaign. You can bring the pressure on the government, on all areas of society, to ensure that something happens. So please, I ask you, do what you can to support this. This massacre of Iraqis and Afghanis is without doubt the worst atrocity in British history. I cannot think of another occasion in 1,000 years when we have murdered men, women and children for no reason whatsoever. It is an appalling atrocity and we must do something about it. I think the reason why it has been allowed to go this far is there is a real evil at the heart of the British government. And I say that in the legal sense and not in the moral sense. Also, the British public tend to be, there's a great sense of apathy and indifference, and that it's somebody else's problem all the time. But it's everybody's problem. It's our problem. We have to do something about it. So if we want to get back to the path of peace, justice and the rule of law, each of us will have to play a part. So, please, do what you can to stop the killing, report criminals to the police, and hold the killers to account in court for their crimes. That way, we will end our involvement in war. Thank you.
Questions then? Yeah, Mr. McGill, my name is Neil Patterson, of course, with Scotland. It's just a quick factual point before we move on. On your press release, you say Scotland Yard to investigate the most of war crimes allegations. Officers from Scotland Yard have commenced a criminal investigation. I spoke with Scotland Yard on the way to this meeting this afternoon to say that that is not the case, that indeed all they have done is they are considering a complaint from a member of the public, as they would do any member of the public who reports a crime to them. Now, clearly, as you said in your preamble, it's very important that we get everything factually accurate here, and there is a vast gulf of difference between assets within Scotland Yard being allocated to a criminal investigation and the police merely considering that your claims that a crime has been committed. First of all, what's your understanding of the situation? And secondly, if a criminal investigation hasn't begun, are we here merely to kind of lend weight to your calls for an independent investigation?
Maybe if we get Simon and Rob and Chris, who are involved in the meetings with the police, to explain exactly what's happened and the police officers that they met.
Yeah, just to introduce, Simon Moore and Rob Little were the two activists who, if the press needs to talk to them, went into the Marylebone police station and reported these crimes. Would you like to quickly, briefly say what happened?
Sure. Well, Rob and I went to Marylebone police station and after learning that under British common law that that there were crimes related to war, and we reported that under sections 51 and 52 of the International Criminal Court Act, we felt that the Iraq war was illegal, and they took a brief statement of our allegation, and we, having spoken to Chris, we had a pretty low expectation that we would hear anything back on that, but we then heard from officers from Scotland Yard who sent down two specialist officers, and along with Chris we delivered a 6.5 hour statement which included 20 pages of written evidence, and various pieces of evidence were submitted. Now, in my opinion, a criminal investigation begins once that evidence has been submitted and they have a chance to look at that evidence. So, I think
that's where Scotland Yard disagrees.
What would you... Yeah, fine.
Well, they certainly accepted that the evidence we were providing was evidence of a crime, otherwise they wouldn't have sat there for 6 hours listening to us. You know, they were aware of the law. But they weren't aware of the detail. We provided that detail, and they seemed to think there was a case to answer. And it's going to be passed to the CPS to decide what witnesses and what evidence needed to be gathered.
I think in previous situations they have not gone as far as the interview, and that's why we consider this an actual investigation rather than just an inquiry.
I'm not denying that we've obviously made progress on this, but it's clear from what Scotland Yard are saying that there is no criminal investigation underway.
I spoke to them yesterday, the press office. It's the press office you spoke to.
Yeah, and another one.
Right, because it is very important. I want to give you a little bit of background. For 150 attempts, the Metropolitan Police, not the Metropolitan Police, all police forces, we've had certainly over 20 attempts with the Metropolitan Police from a month before the war started. And we know that there are influences at senior levels in the police who are wanting to ensure that a criminal investigation does not start into the International Criminal Court Act 2001, which are the most important criminal offences in this country. they have a duty in law when a crime is reported to investigate the crime. Now, what they are saying is that the crime is under consideration. Is that right?
Yeah, the complaint has been considered. It's if I reported a crime,
yep.
They would first of all consider whether or not crime had been committed.
Now, as I understand it, this is the initial stage of an investigation. In order to get into all the details needed by the Crown Prosecution Service, they have got to establish a number of facts in relation to the law and a number of facts in relation to the crimes and what actually happened in order to establish if and how they will move the investigation forward. I think the press office is trying yet again to bring down the tempo on this, to hide it from, because I have to say that some of the most senior policemen in this country are intimately concerned in covering up and condoning the crimes which they have known about for a month prior to when the war started. So we have a serious problem, a corruption in the police, and I don't say that without a lot of evidence. I also have evidence of corruption within ACPO and various other parts of the police service in order to ensure that proper investigations of these crimes did not occur. And that is still happening. And it's still there, sorry.
Now, I concur with Chris there that for someone just to walk off the street and try and report a crime, that doesn't necessarily mean that an investigation has been instigated. However, for them then to be reapproached by specialist police officers, interviewed, and the interview being taped for over 6 hours, that is the beginning of building an evidential chain around a possible crime. So there's a distinction there, and I think the press office is probably being disingenuous in trying to downplay the significance of that step after all these years of trying.
Chris, I'd just like to also say that they appear to have absolutely no knowledge, the anti-terror people who interviewed you had no knowledge whatsoever of the International Criminal Court Act. They appear to be completely ignorant of what it said or any of its clauses.
I think we have a general problem in this country in every branch of government, Parliament, law enforcement authorities, the judiciary, the armed forces, that none of them know the implications of this country's most important laws. They don't even know that they exist, let alone what is prohibited, what behaviour is prohibited, and what behaviour is allowed. I find that appalling, and I think you'll find that the police are just as ignorant as everybody else, and we must inform them of the laws of war and their duty to uphold and enforce them.
I think the most important thing is to recognise that the campaign has had a significant breakthrough in actually having made all these attempts to get the police to take these allegations seriously. We now have a situation where the breakthrough is made, where specialist officers from Scotland Yard have interviewed the people who have lodged the complaint. 6.5 hours of an interview, collection of evidence, and at that stage now is moving forward into whatever they describe, whether it's an investigation or consideration. I think that's a significant breakthrough after so many attempts. And it will open up the debate again now about the legality of the Iraq war, not just amongst what happens with regard to the legal and judicial system, but also open up the debate again in Parliament. Any other questions?
It's Roshan Hassan from Press TV. Given that you've got such a hard and fast case, why do you think the police haven't investigated up to now? And secondly, what do you think are your chances of a successful prosecution?
We touched on why they haven't acted up till now. We first reported this, as I say, a month before the war started, and Lord Stevens was running the Metropolitan Police. Now, I believe that because no senior policeman in this country knows the laws of war, they didn't even know what the International Criminal Court Act was all about. And certainly in talking to different members of the different parts of the police over the last 5 years, every time one has to go back to square one. There seems to be no system in this country for knowing, passing around what the laws of war are, what is prohibited behaviour and what is allowed behaviour, and what the police's role is in prosecuting or investigating and prosecuting war crimes. War crimes, in the police's mind, is for someone else, somewhere else. It's nothing to do with us. And that is the general attitude throughout every police force in this country.
A chance for a successful prosecution?
I think we have a great chance. The real benefit is that on September the 1st, 2001, we introduced the International Criminal Court Act, 2001. Sections 51 and 52 make it a criminal offence in English law to commit these crimes. Now, you'll find in here the detail of that. And if, as ordinary citizens, we go into every police authority in this country and we say, look, it's our understanding that crimes have been committed under this law, which is domestic criminal law in England and Wales. Would you please investigate it? Here is all the evidence. And if you're going to stop investigating it, we need to know why. And what they never do is tell us why they are not going ahead. So that's where it was really powerful for us.
There's a duty on the Home Office to make the public aware of laws, I believe. Because you can't just make a law and then not tell anyone about it. What's the point?
I think we did quite regularly. Sorry, did you want to come in?
Nigel Morris from Independent. Can I ask, Chris, you said, from what I understand, this is the initial stage of an investigation. Can you tell us why you think it is the initial stage of investigation? What was said to make you think that? How do you know it isn't actually the end of the investigation? They just met you to make you go away, as it were.
A couple of things happened that were different, and Annie mentioned it. On past occasions, we've never got to the second stage, which is the full presentation of evidence, taped and confirmed and taken down in writing by the police officers. That was the first time in 150 attempts that we've ever got to that stage. And we wanted them to give us copies of that, and they said, no, we can't do it just yet, but it will be used. If it's used in court, then it's there and available for you. Now, talking to those two police officers, as when we first started, it was quite obvious that they knew very little about the laws of war, even though it is their specialist unit in the counter-terrorism group in Scotland Yard. They knew very little. However, as we went through it, explaining what the law says and trying to get their understanding of what that means, it became clear that the penny was dropping and they were starting to realise, yes, this is a crime. If it says in law it is a crime of genocide if A, B, C and D occur, and we give them evidence that A, B, C and D have occurred, then they're going to have to do something about it. So it was quite clear to me by the end of it that they were going to start a criminal investigation, but we agreed with them that was only the first part, because we have lots more information to give them. And so over the next, in relation to war crimes, it's a massive issue. If you think about 5,000 people who have actually committed war crimes and 14 different crimes, we may need to very carefully focus on particular individuals and particular crimes and gather evidence that can be used in court to bring an effective, successful prosecution. And that process from then till now is going to be the complex one that we must get your help to ensure that it moves ahead properly.
And how was it left? What did they say to you would happen next?
They told us, if I'm right, sorry, Simon, would you like to respond?
The officer said that they would present the case to the Crown Prosecution Service, and that we should pursue it with the CPS, but that they would look in, basically that they would begin to investigate our allegations and then present their information to the CPS.
And with the CPS, work out what areas to go next. It's a very complex problem. If, for instance, we decide that a particular order given, for instance, to a bomb for Fallujah is going to be focused on in relation to genocide, we then have to focus all the evidence for that particular crime and against genocide and the individuals concerned, and that information all has to be tied in together if a successful prosecution is going to take place.
Have you got any more meetings arranged for this?
Where we left it was that we would present more once they had started to get to grips with the problem. What I did ask them on the phone recently was that would they please brief their senior officers and the Crown Prosecution Service on the laws of war, because if none of them know anything about it, then they're not going to do a good job. So we made the arrangement that we would try to, in this case, which is unusual and not usual for them or anybody else, to brief them on the laws that they're going to have to uphold. We then said we would come back later with more and more information. Now, we need to work on that and continuously provide it to different police forces, because I do know that one police force is not going to be enough.
Yeah, so a question, Adrian Crutton, a question for Simon. What was the date of this interview, did you say?
December the 20th was our interview at Belgravia.
December the 20th. Have they been in contact with you since, the police?
The police said that they would be in contact with us and that we could contact them at any stage. It's worth noting that we did try and make contact and they've been put on extended leave, these two officers.
After telling us that they'd be onto it in the new year, they've now disappeared.
I agree with them not to give them at the moment. However, if no action occurs, I'd be quite happy to share those with everybody.
Was there any reason given for this being put on extended leave?
No. An extended leave, I can't remember the exact words, we've got to be a bit careful about that, but it's certainly long leave, and neither of them are here to answer your question when I phoned up in order to do the next step. Since then I've spoken to another officer, and he has said that things are progressing and that they would be in touch.
I'd like to ask you a question. To come back to the point that British citizens don't know the law and that laws pass without our knowledge and all that kind of thing. With regard to MPs, is it true that you sign an oath to uphold law, both domestic and international law, when you become an MP? So I would like to ask you, I know you voted against the war, what you are doing to tell the British public that it's against the law to pay tax under Article 25 of the Statute of Rome.
I work at Conscience, the organisation Conscience, which supports those people who withdraw their taxes, that element of their taxes who refuse to support, that are allocated to weapons and the military. I supported Conscience in their campaign and supported a 10-minute rule bill to change the law to enable that to happen. Unfortunately, that was voted down.
Do you tell your constituents, have you sent out any briefings about the law of war since...
yes, and I held public meetings in my constituency, yeah.
You and extensive. You tell them it's against the law to pay tax, to provide the means?
With the Conscience campaign, I give them the information that's available around what I think...
That's with the Conscience campaign,
let me finish. Based upon it's with my constituents as well, so I've held meetings in my constituency. Based upon what I think is their rights, and I think they have a right to withhold that element of their taxes which goes towards the war, because I believe it's illegal. So yes, I've done those meetings.
So how much is the element of tax that goes towards the war then?
I can't give you the exact figure, but Conscience did a calculation on it, which is quite a lot. And also the government have sort of hedge the figures, particularly around the cost of Iraq, which I think now is $6 to $7 billion, but it's most probably more.
Can I add one little thing to that question? There's an important point, and that is that Conscience have been working for 40 years on the basis of withholding tax on a matter of conscience. Since 2001, it has been a criminal offence to pay tax, and that is the bit that people do not know.
So
And that's the bit that we must get clear around this country. It is now a criminal offence to assist an act of genocide. So every tax payment that goes into the government, that is used by the government in any way it chooses, but contributes partly to the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, is a criminal offence under the International Criminal Court Act 2001.
And how can they do that? How can they avoid paying tax? I understand there's a mechanism...
With extreme difficulty.
Paying into court. But Chris, could you comment on that? There's a mechanism, isn't there, for paying your tax into court?
Well, that's a very simple one, yes. Just organise with a local court to say, no, I want to put this tax into court, for the court to hold it until these issues are decided in court and whether or not it is a criminal offence. But you need to organise that.
It's very important, because people might not want to stop paying tax completely, but they would happily pay into court.
Absolutely.
Can I just quickly finish off that one? It's just one more thing. Do you ever appear on the TV?
I seek to appear on the TV when necessary.
If you're doing your utmost to get this news out to people that it's against the law to pay tax, wouldn't it be best to do it on national media?
I think we've got them here.
Yeah. But I mean, do you use every opportunity?
In view of the fact that we now know that the advice given by the last Attorney General was false and illegal, would you be able to ask questions in Parliament to the other members of Parliament and on what basis Lord Goldsmith gave us
If you recall, interestingly enough, it was in this room on the day of the debate, parliamentary debate on the war, that a group of barristers advised MPs about the illegality of the war.
Will you be able to ask that question now?
Let me finish.
Sorry.
Yeah. And since then, there have been a range of MPs, including myself, who've been raising that in Parliament. If you remember Bob Marshall Andrews, in the debate 6 months ago, 3 or 4 months ago, raised the issue yet again, and challenged the then Prime Minister, Tony Blair, about the different legal advice that was provided, the legal advice that changed from Goldsmith, if you remember, within 48 hours, that was given to the Cabinet and then to Parliament. So yes, we'll be going back over. And following the press conference today, we'll be putting more parliamentary questions down as well. Gives us let's pay tribute to make all history. What their dogged pursuit has done has opened this issue up again. Now, whether the Met Press Office call this an investigation or not, this is a significant breakthrough to have serious consideration of these allegations by specialist officers of the Metropolitan Police. And that gives us the opportunity of then raising this more widely and opening that debate up again. But let's pay tribute to those MPs that have. Adam Price couldn't make it here today, he's in Cardiff, but he's been consistently pursuing this. Bob Marshall Andrews and others. It's been on a cross-party basis.
But we don't see MPs with this upholding of a we don't see them on the mass media. We don't see them speaking about this issue.
That's partly to do with what's covered in the mass media, isn't it? Basically, as well. Sorry, there was someone at the back. Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask about the support from your colleagues in Parliament for this initiative, given that it's only been about 5 or 6 days since we decided to do this press conference.
All the information, has been Chris has provided, has been circulated round. Well, we'll test it out by putting another early day motion down and raising it again with questions, etc. If you remember, don't underestimate some of the work that's been done by people like Adam Price and others about consistent. Yeah. It gives us the opportunity to get that information out too. It will add to the hope, the seriousness which by the Metropolitan Police and other police force will look at this matter too. A couple of final questions, because I see people getting it briggled.
Sorry, Chris, can you confirm whether this is the first time that, to your knowledge, that the police have basically taken evidence of crimes related to the British government and the International Criminal Court Act 2001?
I think so, but we must make sure that every force around the country does the same thing, and only then will we really start to get a mass movement to get these crimes answered for in court.
And of course in Europe as well.
It would be very helpful, yes.
Yeah.
Bring pressure to bear on the British government to uphold the law from every area possible.
The press release has already been spread around a number of European news websites, and the response has been overwhelmingly positive, so we hope to build this campaign across the continent.
Any final words you want to
say? Hi. Have you done anything at all to inform the troops in the field as to the crimes of war that you've elaborated on today?
No is the answer to that, but I think it's the most important thing of all, and I certainly was planning to put the next set of evidence in relation to the offences committed by the chiefs of staff.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we get one military officer understanding that they have committed genocide, then I think this war will stop immediately. They are liable to be prosecuted in the International Criminal Court, and every soldier and every officer has committed a criminal offence.
Chris, just a quick one. Can you enlighten us, or what's the position of war law being taught at Sandhurst?
Well, that would be an excellent opportunity. I think the big underlying problem behind all of this is that no one in this country knows the laws of war. So if there's anything anyone can do to get these passed round so that people know them by heart, then we'll start to get action. And there's nobody more important than our armed forces. They need to know when they are committing a crime. And our Air Force, for instance, they love bombing from a distance. They have no understanding whatsoever of the hundreds of criminal offences they are committing every time they release a cluster bomb.
Are we over time?
You are by half an hour.
Okay, sorry about that. Okay, we'll move out. We're committing an offence. Thank everyone for coming along. Thank Make War History for their dogged campaign. Thank you.
Thank you.